So last week, I taught you a little, chant isn't really the word. It wasn't like very rah-rah, but I taught you a question. So last week, we asked you this very simple question. What makes you happy? And you all have a response you have to say. So this is like test moment. This is like, I'm going to cry or be happy based upon what you say. So what makes you happy? The answer is, I'm so proud. That right there, front row, that's really good. So A student right there, that's awesome. So we talked about last week what makes you happy, and we said no actual thing will make you happy because happiness is always a who, and it's not a what. When we talked about happiness, last week we noted happiness tends to come on three different planes of peace, that happy people are always people who are at peace, and they're at peace in three specific areas. And those three specific areas are they're at peace with God, peace with others, and peace with themselves. And we looked at this thing that Jesus said where he said that the greatest commandment that God has given people was the idea that we would love others, or I'm sorry, we'd love our neighbor as ourselves, and that we would love God with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength. And in that idea, Jesus captures those three different ideas. And so today, we're actually going to talk a little bit more about what makes you happy, and we're actually going to dig very specifically into something that Jesus says himself to talk about how we can be happy and becoming happy, which I feel like, hey, even if you're not Christian, right, I'd be kind of interested in knowing what Jesus has to say about how to be happy. So we're going to check that out today. Now, I recognize, and we said this last week too, that when we think about Jesus and happiness, some of us grew up, like you grew up in a religious environment or in a family, and it was kind of like those things were actually at odds. And so when you were a kid, you learned that song, if you're happy and you know it, right? And some of you grew up in the family or the church where it's like, if you're happy and you know it, just repent, was like the answer to that, right? And it was like, because don't be happy, right? That's like so shallow or that's so crazy, right? Why would you ever want to do that? And that just breaks my heart for a number of reasons. But one of the main reasons it breaks my heart is because, like, I think Jesus actually wants you to enjoy the life that he created for you to have in this world, right? Like, heaven forbid that you would actually do that. And so Jesus actually wants to guide and lead us toward how to be happy. And so today, he says very literally, like, happy are people who blank. And he says a bunch of these statements we're going to look at. Now, today we're going to look at this passage of scripture from Matthew chapter 5, and we're going to see this word a lot show up, this word blessed. Now, I need you to bear with me for a second because I'm going to give you a language lesson, all right? I'll try and make it as quick, easy, and painless as possible. Blessed, so Matthew, this book we're going to look at, is a part of the New Testament, the part of the Bible that was written during Jesus' life and like immediately thereafter, covering kind of that period of 50 years or so. And so Matthew, one of Jesus' 12 disciples, is going to record for us these things that Jesus said, and he uses this word that gets translated from the Greek that the New Testament was written in into our English word, bless. And the Greek word actually gets translated as this one right here, makarios. Now, makarios is really important for us to look at because literally translated, this word actually means blessed, fortunate, well off, or which, look at that, our little word, happy, right? And so Jesus is actually going to name for us different ways that we can be happy. What's also interesting about this makarios word is that prefix, ma, actually is applied to words, and when it's applied to a Greek word, it makes it mean long-lasting something. So think of like, when something is sub, right, we know it is below, right? When someone says, it is sub-zero outside, right, it is below zero, you should run, that kind of thing, right? And in the same way, when ma is applied to a word, that means, hey, whatever follows it, that this is a long-lasting version of that. And so Jesus is actually going to point us toward how to experience long-lasting happiness. Now, as we dive in, one thing I just want to name off the top is Jesus is going to say a bunch of stuff, and at different points, we're going to hear what Jesus says, and you're going to think, I don't think that sounds very happy, right? And I just want to name that off the top because, you'll think I'm stupid if I don't. And so I just want to say that as we begin. Now, here's what I want you to keep an open mind about. Jesus is going to name what are, to us, counterintuitive ways to be happy. But what's also interesting to me is if you look at, like, studies and research and all this kind of stuff, is that we as a country continue to find ourselves more and more stressed, less and less at peace, more and more anxious, and less happy. And so as I've said to you a couple times before with different things, hey, our system is perfectly designed to get us the results we're getting. And so if the system we have to think about happiness as a country, as people, as a culture, is one that leads to more anxiety, more depression, you know, less peace, less happiness, maybe we need to be open to a new system. And so you can leave today and feel like, that was dumb, that was so dumb, you know, silly, stupid, you know, whatever. Hey, I mean, you're arguing with Jesus, not me. Yeah, so think on that, you know, I don't know, anyway. And so I just want you to kind of keep an open mind over the next 20 minutes as we're going to look at these scriptures together. And I just need to say one more thing. We could spend like weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks on each individual thing that Jesus says here. I'm going to do like the equivalent of like a pastoral kamikaze mission right here, because I'm going to try and cover them in 45 seconds apiece. And so I'm sorry, Jesus. Basically is what I'm trying to say out loud, right? Because we're going to move these through these pretty fast. Maybe we'll come back at some point. But I just want to give you a good survey or an overview of what Jesus is trying to lead us toward this morning. So with all that being said, here we go. Matthew chapter 5, verse 3, Jesus begins. He says, "Blessed, happy are the poor in spirit, because theirs is the kingdom of heaven." And what Jesus says right there is happy people are people who know that they are spiritually destitute. That poor in spirit means I understand that when I come to God, like I'm not bringing anything to the table. When I come to God, there's not something magic I do to earn my way with him, right? I understand that when I come to God empty-handed. And that kind of makes sense, because if happiness is equated with peace, then, like, isn't it true that if I just kind of begin with this understanding of God, I know that I'm only invited into your presence by sheer grace and grace alone, right? Like, I don't have to strive or strain or do anything to try and earn my way with you. Isn't it true that that would probably create a lot more peace and therefore a lot more happiness? Jesus continues, and he says one of the ones that sounds really weird to us. He says, "Blessed are those who mourn, because they will be comforted." And immediately we think, Jesus, that sounds so dumb, because like mourning is the exact opposite of being happy, right? Like you're crying, you're mourning, right? And what Jesus is, I think, having in view here is happy people are brokenhearted over sin. Last week we talked about how the thing that threatens our happiness is that three-letter word, sin. And it always undermines and just threatens whatever it is that has been placed in our life that God would love for us to be happy about. And I think the idea that Jesus has in view here is, if we understand what is a threat to our happiness, if we can identify that in ourselves and in others, and if as we identify that in ourselves and others, we do so with an attitude that isn't judgmental and critical, but we do so with the spirit of a mourner, right? Like someone who is compassionate, someone who is brokenhearted, someone who's just like, you know, man, cut me right to the heart over sin. Like, don't you think that understanding might equip us better to be happy? I think it's what Jesus is leading us toward. Jesus continues on, and he says, "Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth." Happy are meek people. And what Jesus is saying here is happy people are gentle. Gentle. When I think about being gentle, the image I have in mind is, those of you with kids, you've probably seen your kid do this, right? But like someone has a dog or a cat, and like your kid goes in to pet the dog or cat, and it's like, you know, it's like, oh, it's like, whoa, you're choking Fluffy. Like, please stop. That's not good. Yeah, we want to be gentle. You know, and the idea of gentleness is I don't have to come rip-roaring in with all of my strength, right? That I can actually lay off a little bit. Right, you know, and what's interesting is gentle people, they're the people that are secure, right? They're at peace with themselves, and they don't have to come into every conversation like it's a Cardi B song, you know, like they don't have to let you know how amazing and awesome they are all the time, you know, like how boss they are, all these kind of things. I went to dinner a few weeks ago, and my wife and I both left the dinner, and there was a person at our table who is like the one-upper, you know, like they're it's like whatever story you told, he had it better. Oh, you had 4 wisdom teeth out? Well, I had 12. All of my teeth are actually wisdom teeth, you know, I don't know, like they're growing out of my nostrils, or I don't know. And like, it's just like, it's so obnoxious, right? Like what is this all about, right? And gentle, meek people, they don't do that, right? They're comfortable with themselves. They don't have to be number one all the time. They don't have to one-up you all the time, right? Their strength under control, right? They are secure. Jesus continues on in the next verse. He says, "Blessed, happy are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, because they will be filled." And Jesus is saying, hey, happy people burn for a better world. Rome and the Roman Empire in the first century had a lot of similarity, right, to our world today, in the sense of hey, Rome was also ruled by, you know, government authorities and people who seemed to have no problem, you know, enriching themselves at the expense of others, right? Rome also had brutal and oppressive people who had positions of power, were Roman centurions, right? And were basically allowed to do kind of whatever they wanted to keep the peace, you know? Rome also had, you know, they had tax collectors who dot the landscape, and there's basically state-sponsored extortion, where they could charge whatever they want, do whatever they want, right? And people would feel, they would just hunger and thirst for a world where people could be treated justly and rightly and fairly. And Jesus says, hey, people who do that, they're going to work toward peace with other people. They're going to bring God's peace about in this world, the kingdom of heaven in this world. And that's part of what makes them happy. Jesus continues on saying, blessed are the merciful, because they will be shown mercy. And what Jesus identifies here is that happy people are generous. Merciful people are people who are generous with the benefit of the doubt, right? They are generously looking to look over faults, right? To try and be forgiving and gracious. Mercy was actually the thing that people would yell in the street, like beggars who are asking for money. They would just yell mercy all the time to ask for financial help from people as they walk by. And what's true about my life, and I'd imagine yours too, is the most happy, life-giving people I know, the people where I find myself going, man, I can't wait to be around them, are generous people. Like, I have not met an unhappy, generous person. Maybe they're out there, I'm sure they have their days and struggles just like anyone else, but on the whole, right, happy people are generous. They give you the benefit of their resources, right, whether that be forgiveness and mercy or financially or resource-wise or whatever, right, because this is part of what they do. Jesus says in the next verse, blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. And I didn't get very creative with this one other than just say happy people are pure people. And pure is a word that has double meaning to it, right? Pure not just means like unblemished and spotless, but pure also can reflect this idea of it's focused, it's undivided. And more than any of these promises that Jesus issues here, this is the one that I have found to be very true for me. That I've had times in my life when I've found myself wandering away from God, away from Jesus, in a pretty impure direction, and I've had seasons in my life where I've walked very closely with God, and I have kind of lived out this pure in heart thing. And inevitably, at the end of one of those wandering kind of times in my life, I will always make a bad decision or two, or three, or ten, and I get to the end, and I think something like this. I look back at the decisions I've made, and I go, man, why didn't I see clearly? Right? What was I thinking? I just couldn't see something. And likewise, man, when I've seen myself walk with God, there's like this almost clairvoyance that comes, like this ability to just know, you know, like you just have this sense in your heart of what's going to happen, what's the right thing to do. You're in tune, you're in step, right? I mean, that's something that brings incredible peace. It is something that will make you so happy. Jesus says, blessed are peacemakers, because they'll be called children of God. Happy people are reconcilers. They're people that try to work for not just like having people be okay and copacetic with one another, but actually working at helping people to be reconciled, to be at one with other people again. Jesus uses this word peacemaker is very intentional because Jesus doesn't want peacekeepers. Peacekeepers are not happy people, right? Peacekeepers are people like me where it's like, hey, let's just not fight, right? Let's get this under the rug. Let's avoid it. Let's do that kind of thing. No, Jesus says it is good to do the hard work of surfacing what is wrong in relationships and in this world, but we shouldn't just leave it there, right? That we should bust our butt to be people who bring parties together again in spite of opposition, in spite of difficulty, in spite of misunderstanding, in spite of, you know, bad behavior sometimes, right? That we are always looking for a way to reconcile relationships. And lastly, Jesus says, blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, which this is another one for me that I kind of think, okay, Jesus, that sounds like the opposite of happy. That sounds like the opposite. I'm so happy to be persecuted. Yay, you know. Because theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And what Jesus is saying is happy people do the right thing even when it's hard. And I know those of you who attended Crossbridge for a while, you'll make fun of me, you know, because I'm kind of his fanboy. But my boy, Andy Stanley, pastor in Atlanta, makes this really great observation that in this world, you're going to suffer for doing the right thing, and you're going to suffer for doing the wrong thing. So you might as well choose the thing that allows you to maintain your peace with God and your peace with yourself and your peace with other people. Because suffering is inevitable, basically, right? And you've probably experienced this in your life where you had an opportunity to do the right thing and you didn't. I know I have. And it just gnaws at you, doesn't it? It eats away at you. It erodes your peace. And what Jesus says is, hey, happy people, they are committed to doing the right thing even when it's not very feasible or expedient. Even when it earns some persecution for them. Now, I just want us to take a look at this list of things here, right? Again, we could spend months talking about these eight things and still not even scratch the surface of all the important stuff for us to talk about. But what's interesting to me is Jesus outlines these eight qualities right here as the way to be happy. And I don't know that if you sat me down and gave me just eight blanks or like, okay, Wes, write the eight ways to be happy. I don't think I would come up with these, you know, just me, okay? What's interesting to me is if we look at all of these different things that Jesus says here, and that Jesus names for us here, they actually all share something in common. And the thing that they share in common is that they're all character issues. They're all identity issues, right? They aren't individual actions, and they aren't even individual choices, though our individual choices will be the things that lead us there. That happiness is actually something Jesus points out that stems from who I am. It stems from my character. It stems from the kind of person that I am, which I think is in part why it is so long-lasting, right? Why it's not just the quick fix, quick hit kind of happiness. But fortunately or unfortunately, what that also means is happiness isn't instantaneous. When we think happiness in our culture, we think McDonald's, right? When we say, right, you're probably like, no, I do not think McDonald's, actually. That sounded really dumb when that came out of my mouth. We think fast food, right? Jesus, though, he's kind of thinking barbecue, right? He's thinking like that big hunk of beef brisket that you leave out in the smoker for like 9,000 hours, right? Until it's like disintegrated into like just nothing. I don't know. That's probably not the way you smoke beef brisket. But the idea is, hey, if you want something good, it doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen instantaneous. If you want long-lasting, just, man, even when stuff is hard, it's still good. Kind of happiness that's going to be something that stems from your character. It's something that stems from the inside, not something that comes from some instantaneous little decision or experience or kind of thing I have, which isn't exactly the answer that I really like, because I like the idea of being able to want happiness and then 5 seconds later, you know, make a phone call or send a text or, you know, buy this product on TV and being able to achieve it. But it doesn't work that way, Jesus says. It actually works quite differently. Now, Jesus, if you're not a Christian, you should totally go home and you should just read Matthew 5, 6, and 7. Because I guarantee you that even if you aren't a Christian, you're like, don't even talk to me about this. You know, I do not want to be a Jesus follower. Get away from, you know, I've got enough magazines. Get away, you know. You should read these, because I guarantee you, even if you're not a Jesus follower, you're going to find stuff Jesus says in there that you're like, wow, that's really smart. That's really good. And Jesus, because he's so smart, because he's the Son of God, right? He has all this understanding and knowledge. He understands something about the way that we work and the way our world works. Oftentimes we don't. And that Jesus understands when we hear something that to us sounds really impressive and amazing and like inspiring and convicting, that we just kind of take that feeling, we're like, yeah, you know, and we like, you know, just take it to heart. We feel good about that, right? And Jesus understands it's not actually that makes the difference. It's actually your application, it's your doing that makes the difference, right? Like hearing what Jesus said is kind of like buying paint to redo, you know, your kitchen or something like that, and then just leaving it outside under your carport or something in your garage, right? Like it doesn't do you any good, right? It's just sitting there. Unapplied paint is not helpful to you, right? It's the application that makes the difference, and that's the same way that works with Jesus' teaching. And so Jesus says all this stuff. He starts with, you know, the happy R's, the happies, you know, the Beatitudes. He talks about all this stuff, and then he gets to the end of this little journey, and I think knowing that people will be tempted to go, wow, you know, good job, Jesus. You know, well done, well said, sir, you know. Jesus tells a little story. And he tells a story, and it goes like this. It's a story that maybe you're familiar with. Some of you, if you grew up in church, please do not sing the song. That's all I have to ask you, okay? Everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, the winds blew and beat against that house, but it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. Now, let's just stop here before we move on. Think about how hard it would be 2,000 years ago to build a house on rock. I mean, I don't know anything about home building. I'm like the one volunteer that Habitat for Humanity is probably excommunicated because, like, it's like, no, sir, we're better off without you helping build our house, actually. But that would be hard, right? You don't have electricity. You don't have a jackhammer. You don't have a crane. You don't have a bulldozer. You don't have a bobcat. You don't have any of these big, heavy mechanical supplies to use to build your foundation, right? All you've got is blood, sweat, and tears. You know, you got a chisel and a hammer, right? That's how you build on rock. A couple of years ago, I have two friends, Matt and Jared, and Matt was getting ready to put a deck on the back of his house. So Matt asked Jared if he would come over and help him to do this. And of course, Matt, because he's smart and he wanted Jared to say yes, neglected to inform him that the entire backyard behind his home was made of clay. And so Jared and Matt are out back and they have an auger, you know, one of those things you use like drill in the ground to make the holes for the posts that the deck was going to sit on. And Jared is like working, man, just like to chisel through this clay with this auger. He whined about it for months afterwards. We had to listen to him like, oh, wow, you know, all this kind of stuff. He's my coworker. We'd always make fun of him, and we had to hear it every day. But his hands, you know, they were just ripped to shreds. You know, if you ever seen someone who's like started CrossFit, you know, in like the first week, it's like your hands are just like bloody pustules right now. Like, what happened? You know, because lifting all those weights, that's what Jared's hands look like. They're beaten up, man. But doing that hard work was necessary because if they hadn't, that is not a deck that you would want to sit on. That is not a deck you'd be sitting out back sipping your sangria or your Miller Lite or whatever and being like, man, this is the good, and then you like fall through or something like that, right? Because it's not a sturdy foundation. It's not good. And Jesus says in the same way, hey, if you want to build a solid foundation, it comes from hearing my words and applying them. And yes, that's hard. Yes, that's difficult. Yes, that is not going to be easy. Yes, it will take time. But it's the way you build a foundation. And then Jesus tells the cautionary tale. Everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man. Now, here's what's interesting about not putting Jesus' words into practice, is it doesn't assume that you have a negative disposition toward them. You can hear the words of Jesus and you can agree with them. You can think they're insightful. You can teach them to your kids. You can amen to them. You can shout and sing about them. You can do whatever you want with them. But if you don't actually do them, they aren't any good to you. They aren't getting you anywhere. They aren't helping you take a step closer to what makes you happy. Right? Because what makes us happy is actually doing what Jesus says. And so he says, hey, you're like a foolish man who builds a house on sand. And then he finishes the story in a way that you can probably predict, right? The rain came down, the streams rose, the winds blew, and they beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. And what strikes me is that for a lot of us, when we build our happiness, we lean it against stuff that is destined to fall with a crash. We lean it against our promotion at work. We lean it against getting her or him to say yes. We lean it against getting married. We lean it against having a kid. We lean it against making more money or getting more things or having a better house or living anywhere but Tallahassee or living, you know, or graduating school or getting into the grad school of my choice or you name it. And those might bring you temporary happiness when they happen. In fact, they probably will, you know. But the fact is that at some point it's going to crash. It's not going to sustain you. It's going to end up not making you happy anymore. And in fact, in some cases, the thing, how ironic is this, right? The thing I look to for happiness now becomes the greatest source of my unhappiness. And so maybe we should hear Jesus out and simply say, Jesus, if you point us toward happiness, and I'm not going to be content to just like listen and hear, I actually want to do. Jesus, point in this whole thing is that the pathway to happiness isn't knowing, it's sowing. It's not just knowing and hearing and having an understanding of what the right thing to do is. It's actually sowing. It's actually doing it. It's actually, you know, doing the work of planting the seed that one day will harvest what it is I desire, the happiness I hope to find. You know, we started today with this question of, you know, what makes you happy? And the answer that, you know, kind of led us to think about is, well, it's no thing, right? But I'm actually going to add a second response to it that's also so-ing. How good was that? Yeah, right? See, they both end in ing. That is really good, yeah? Okay, so now, because I know you're going to hate it, we're going to all say it together, okay? So, what makes you happy? No thing. So-ing. All right, one more time, okay? What makes you happy?
No thing.
Oh, that's so good. I'm so impressed. So happy. Okay. So the question we kind of have to end with, and you knew I was going to come back to this too, those of you who are here, is where's the time to get going with the sowing, right? Like where is it time for us to sow something new? And so my challenge to you is I would love for you to read through Jesus' Beatitudes, these happy statements he makes, and I simply want you to do one of them. I want you to put one of them into practice. And in the spirit of going first, in the spirit of trying to lead us there, I just want to talk about three things that got impressed on me as I prayed through these in the past week and read in the past week, as I reflected on what a horrible, wretched man I am in the past week, and share these with you. And maybe yours are like mine. Maybe yours are totally different than mine. I just want to spark some thought, and I want us to leave this place not just like thinking about, oh, yeah, that sounds nice, right, but actually doing something. So the first thing I want to talk about is I need some help being meek. A couple of weeks ago, I'm in a community group with Eric and Katie Eggers over here, and Eric coaches, if you haven't noticed already, he coaches this kids' soccer team called the Owls, and so today is probably the first time I've seen Eric not wearing owl paraphernalia of some sort, because he's basically bought out the official campus bookstore of any NCAA team that is the Owls or something like that, okay? So every time he's got like owls. So the other day he was telling us some owl facts in our community group, and he asked us the question, do you know what a group of owls is called? And all of our group like was like, oh, what is it? You know, we couldn't think of it. It was like on the tip of my tongue. Does anyone know what it is? Okay, good. You guys like our small group. It was a parliament of owls is what it's called. So anyway, so he said that. And the first, like, he said that. And the first thing out of my mouth was, oh, yeah, Parliament of Owls. That was this indie band in college I really liked a lot. And Eric, being ever so perceptive, immediately retorted with, oh, wow, that's a really good job of spouting off an unrelated fact to distract us from the fact that you didn't know what a group of owls was called. You know, and you're totally right. You know, like, and I thought about that this week. I thought about, why is it that, like, I'm so insecure with the idea of saying, I don't know, right? Like, I mean, I don't think, maybe I'm wrong, I don't think anyone in this room judges how impressive a person is by, do you know what a group of owls is called? You know, like if you do, you need some help, you know? Like, I think that's probably a bad way to identify, you know, how impressive people are to us, right? But yet, for whatever reason, on the slightest, smallest thing, right, that was so important to me to make sure to distract away from, like, oh, Wes doesn't know that, right? And so for me, I want to practice saying the words, I don't know, more often. I want to practice not having to be the answer man. I want to be able to be a little more open-handed, right? I don't want to have to walk into a room and have to feel like I'm number one, right? Because that's a lot of pressure on you, right? Because yeah, that's a really hard image to maintain, and if, you know, people around you are really honest, please don't be honest with me, I already know. You're not doing a very good job of maintaining that anyway, probably, right? And I think if I want to be meek, and if I want to be gentle, if I want to find happiness, what in part it means is I have to be content and secure with the fact of, like, I don't know everything, that's okay. It's okay to be a little bit weak. Second thing I thought about is this word from Jesus, the word peacemaker. And last week we sent you out of here, and at the bottom of your program there was this little question where I asked you to rate your peace with God, with yourself, and with other people. And I can't remember why, like, my God rating was fine. It was like a 7 or an 8, something like that. But on others and people, I put like a 4 for myself, and I put a 5 for like my peace with other people. And I put that down, and I know those were the right answers. And so I was thinking about, why did I put those numbers? You know, why aren't those a 7 or an 8, you know? And it's not like I could look around my life and be like, oh yeah, I have bitter conflict with all these different people right now. And what I came up with was this idea of, I'm not a peacemaker, I'm a peacekeeper. And I'm not very good, in fact, at several points this week, I kind of noticed it, where someone let me down, and instead of like working through that with them, you know, instead of like kind of doing the hard work of like trying to say, hey, I just need you to know when this happens and this happens, like it makes it hard for me. And I'm not saying that to whine or complain. I'm saying that because I want this relationship to be right, and I want us to be good with each other. And I want us, like, I want not to have bitterness in my heart toward what's going on here and toward this dynamic, right? And I don't do that. I just go, okay, you know, I just kind of bury it. And what is abundantly clear to me is that is not maintaining or keeping any sort of peace with myself and peace with other people around me. And so one of my commitments this week is to say, hey, how can I do a better job of, like, not just keeping the peace, but making peace? Even when that means I need to surface something that I'm not really excited, you know, I'm not like a conflict-loving kind of person, you know. Maybe if you're that person, maybe you should hold back a little bit, you know. But I don't know. I need to do a better job at that. Third thing. These words, poor in spirit. I have a friend who, about a year or so ago, said, hey, I've got a word from the Lord for you, which anytime someone says that to me, I get really nervous because it's like, oh, yeah, great. Oh, yeah. I don't know where that was a word from, but not the Lord is the answer to where that came from, right? And that gets like really hokey and wonky. And then I also start thinking about my life and thinking about, like, oh, my gosh. Did I like secretly embezzle money I don't know about? Or like, you know, did that thing I ran over, I thought was like, you know, just a bump in the road. Maybe it was a person. Oh my gosh. You know, like I start, you know, just like searching my life for all these bad things that don't exist, right? And my friend said some very kind words to me, but kind of the thing that she wanted to leave me with was this idea of like, hey, Wes, I just need you to know that like, God doesn't need your help. It was kind of the idea, right? Like, God doesn't need you to, like, be his hype man. Like, he's just fine. He was good before you came to this world, and he's going to be just fine when you leave it. In fact, he might be a little bit better. Yeah, I don't know. Who knows, right? And I just kind of, you know, in the same way that once, like, you buy a, I don't know, you know, you buy, like, a red car, right? Now you see your red cars on the highway all of a sudden. Yeah, in the same way, I kind of started to notice the places in my life where I do that. And I didn't really know what to do with that until I kind of looked at these words this week and thought about what does it mean to come to Jesus with empty hands? And in part, what I think that means for me is that I need to embrace the idea that my weakness is the place where God can demonstrate his strength. And so for me, the next step to kind of grow in being poor in spirit, to grow in being happy, is every day I've started to pray this prayer. And this prayer goes something like simply, God, help me see that my weakness is an open invitation for you to display your strength. And help me to be okay with that. And, I mean, I'm like 5 days into it, right? So, like, what do I know about how big of a difference that can make? But my suspicion is, if that would slowly turn from being a prayer I pray to something I live, that would be a great increaser of my peace with God, myself, and with other people, and thus a great increaser of my ability to be happy, maybe yours too. Now, those are three I shared. I'm sure at some level, all 9 of them, I have a place to grow, and I'm sure you probably do too. I'm just asking you to pick one. But don't just settle for thinking about it. And don't just settle for marinating on it. I want you to actually do it. I want you to actually look at these and do them. Next week, we're going to come back. We're going to talk about how we find peace with God. And if you're a Jesus follower, one of the things that you believe is that peace with God is the foundational cornerstone to how we experience peace in this world. And so we're going to talk about that very specifically. You will not want to miss it. I would love for you to come and be a part of that with us next weekend. So let me pray for us, and we'll finish up here today. Father in heaven, I thank you so much for Jesus, you revealing to us the pathway toward happiness. Help us not chase after lesser things. Help us not chase after the stuff that makes big promises that it can't fulfill. And Jesus, instead, help us to choose your way. God, the way that embraces things like being a peacemaker and being poor in spirit and hungering and thirsting for righteousness and seeking and desiring, God, to be meek, to be merciful. Jesus, may we not just hear these words, though I pray they would work their way into our hearts this week. I pray they would not just live at that level, but Jesus, I pray that they would be something that we actively participate in, and that they would be something that we do. God, help us to be sowers of the word that you've planted in us this morning. We pray this in Christ's name. Amen.